place. Hey, we go get something to eat.
Nah, it's better if we stay put.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, season 10, episode 20. Ever heard the one about the exploding father? And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah DeBuddick. Insert explosion music cue here.
I just watched the Exploding Father episode recently for the book that we're running. What a wild ride we just had with the BH90210 comic revival. JK, we're recording this on July 31st before it has premiered. Hello, everybody from the past.
Yes, and the future at the same time.
Oh, you just broke my brain. Let's get into this episode. Speaking of broken brains, which is directed by Anson Williams, Potsy himself. Starting with our D plot. Matt's new client, Stuart, is a comic who's had a club owner breach his booking contract when the comic walked the whole audience. Like, everyone left. He also can't stop doing bits in this meeting despite Matt's earnest support of him as an artist. And then we learn Matt is such a great lawyer that this nothing contract dispute has gone to court. Also, the club owner is played by Fred Travellina, now dead impressionist of yesteryear. And spoiler, he gets no lines in this episode. I don't know why they cast him. Like, this is, feels like a favor. Someone was doing someone, but I can't imagine what it was. Like, yeah. What is this a reward for?
Someone lose a bet? And it's just like, well, it's the last season, so why don't you? And then he's like just sitting there. Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird.
This whole subplot is such a trial. Sorry.
So Stuart takes the stand, having apparently been prepped by Matt. Not at all. Clip two.
And would you define comedy as any joke, satire, or humorous performance designed to make people laugh?
No, that would be the before and after pictures of Linda Tripp.
Thanks so much for wasting our time.
Oh my God, Matt is such a bad lawyer.
Yeah.
Defense counsel then tries to get Stuart to do his act for the jury. Matt objects. The judge overrules, but tells him one joke from his set at the Chuckle Factory should be sufficient to give jurors an idea of his material. So off he goes. Clip three.
Hey, everybody. These two peanuts walk into a bar, and one of them is accosted. Shoot. He's bothered.
Assaulted.
Oh, that's so sad.
Oh my God. The
Nailed
portent
it, Your Honor.
They give this joke that is older than all of us put together. Like, I don't get it.
I don't either. I also don't, like, it is episode 20 of the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we still trying to make Matt happen?
Yes.
It's just not. Who cares?
So Matt moves for a continuance because he's a bad lawyer. Only now has it occurred to Matt that he needs to prep his client, which he's doing by putting him on the stage at the club during the day. For those of his friends who couldn't plausibly get out of it so that Stuart can practice his act, I guess, before trying it again for the jury.
Great idea.
Here we are. We couldn't get plausibly get out of it either. Stuart is extremely nervous. His material is so old and bad that fucking Ryan is yelling out the punchlines before he can get to them himself.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Stuart is flustered and tells Matt he wants to drop the case. So somehow off screen, Matt convinced Stuart to stick with his case-ish because the defense has just called Stuart back to the stand, and Stuart, sitting there in a suit next to Matt, says he wants to drop it like he already told him. And the judge is like, hello. So Matt has to get up to explain how nervous Stuart is and flow right into a bunch of very old lawyer and judge jokes that we're supposed to think everyone loves. And once the courtroom's all warmed up and laughing, Matt drops a bomb. All of that was Stewart's material, which it definitely isn't. Again, these are all super old jokes everyone knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, later we find out Matt convinced the jury that Stewart was at least a good joke writer, which is not what he was hired to do on stage at a comedy club, but whatever. Nope. Moving on to our C plot. Now we're supposed to care if Ryan goes back to college. Janet and Steve are sleep training Maddie, and it's as tiresome here as it has been on every other show you've ever seen it on. Mm-hmm. Ryan comes home in the middle of this with Subway, by the way, and Janet and Steve come down to try and talk him into returning to college in clip 4.
So where you been, Ryan? Out.
Ryan, do you know what a big decision this is?
Do you know what you're missing out on?
An education.
And frat parties and 4-day weekends and geographically confined co-eds, huh? Huh?
Co-eds? When are we, writers? When do you think we are? Because between these ancient jokes and this, co-eds, fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Also,
these are
weirdly,
definitely writers in their 50s.
I was just working on the episode in which we first see Randy Spelling, which was way back in season 3 when he was a goofy, like, tween camp counselor assistant with Andrea. Yeah.
Before he was Ryan.
Yeah.
He was just some guy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, with braces, I think. Oof. Thanks.
Anyway, this tack doesn't work. And the next night, Noah is badly bartending, leaving Ryan to try and hit on the cute customer Noah is ignoring. This actress's name is Susan Wagner, and she is instantly recognizable to me, though I have no idea which of her credits is for, but she played Susan Day in a behind-the-scenes Partridge Family movie before this. Remember when networks were doing those, like, all
yes.
the time?
Yes. Remember the Monkees one?
Yes. Good old Lakeview so Lunch bad. In Toronto was a formative location, according to that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, okay. Here she has the baby boomer name of Sheila.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When are we?
Ryan wins her over. This is not the only name comedy that's in this episode, by the way, but we'll get to it. Ryan wins her over by getting Noah's attention. Apparently, Nat's bad business instincts apply to all establishments in the building. Clip 5.
No. No friend of Ryan's pays for a drink here.
Definitely stop by.
Okay. Guess if you know the bartender, you move to the head of the class, huh?
That's right.
Ooh, cool.
Isn't Ryan still underage?
Yeah, they establish later that he can make drinks, but he can't, like, oh no, he can serve drinks, he can't make them. It's like
right.
they spec it out. Whatever.
So he's underage. The fuck, right. Noah?
Anyway.
Why do I care?
Noah politely tries to have a conversation, but he's down a bar back and swamped with customers. So yeah, Ryan offers to help. The next day. Oh, I see. Cause he's ordering. Got it.
Yeah.
Sorry. Duh. The next day, Maddie's fussy and exhausted, and the debate over whether sleep training is working segues to a debate about how to parent Ryan, who just then comes in to announce that Noah gave him a job and he'll be crashing at Noah's until he gets his own place. So that night, Sheila is back flirting with Ryan as he sets shots on fire and gets her number. Steve comes in on the end of this wanting to talk him out of this new scheme, though calling bartending no kind of life in front of Noah is kind of rude. But then again, it is Noah and a failing business, so I guess I'll allow it. And this is also where we get the exposition that Ryan can serve drinks, he just can't pour them or drink them, as was Sarah's point. Steve doesn't think Ryan is living up to his potential and demands that Ryan get his stuff. Noah tries to intervene, but it's not really the right time in his character arc, since Steve can say he doesn't want Ryan to end up like him. And if Noah wants company, he should go to an AA meeting. Go one, please. Yeah. Still haven't seen you do that.
Yeah, it's like Steve is like so rude and while Ryan is working, basically. And it's like, would this have worked on you?
Yeah.
Come on. It's hilarious, though. And even Noah's sort of like, well, you got me there. Like,
yeah. So next morning, we find out Ryan has actually managed to get Sheila back to Noah's place. And he comes out to the kitchen to find Noah trying to read one of his organic chem textbooks. And Vincent Young makes a very easy what book be face that you can see in the visual aids. Long story short, Noah agrees with Steve that Ryan shouldn't squander his potential like Noah did. LOL, what potential? You were a legacy. No one thought you could do anything, including yourself, and everyone was right. You suck.
Yeah. And you also had the potential to drunk drive someone to death, and you lived up to that and did nothing about it. So shut up.
Mm-hmm. Later, sleep training / brother training parallelism continues, although at least in this scene, Janet gets to wear a cute top, which you can see the visual aids.
So cute. I miss those tops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a long sleeve t-shirt with like sort of design around the hem and around the sleeve cuffs and something in the middle. It's like vaguely Indian looking kind of.
Yeah. And it's like super like hyper saturated contrasting colors. Mm-hmm. So it's like this very bright red background. And then the design is this light, like light teal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everyone was wearing those for about a year. You saw them on Felicity all the time, usually on Julie, but whatever.
With a long, 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 long pattern skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And flat form slip-ons.
Yep. Owned that outfit.
Who didn't? Mm. Janet says that Steve was on the idiot track and got his life to work, and Ryan will do that too. So the next day, Steve shows up at Noah's looking for Ryan. Noah is, not unreasonably, still rankled about the way Steve shit on him at the club the other night, and Steve actually apologizes nicely, and Noah accepts. And Ryan comes out just then with Sheila in one of his shirts. Introductions are made. Steve reflexively smiles pervily and eyes her down. And when Steve asks Sheila to excuse them, he finally relents and says that whatever Ryan wants to do with his life is fine with Steve. And then in my notes, Jesus Christ, the sleep training still isn't over because Janet is bailing on the program. Ryan comes back to say he's decided to return to Amherst. Bye. This was a waste of everyone's time.
I think he's actually transferring to CU, but first he's going to go, quote, see Rush in Europe.
Oh.
And we never saw him again. Fine with me.
On to the B plot. David's up for a radio job in New York. LOL.
David barely has a radio job here. Like, remember how we always used to joke at Television Without Pity that nobody knew JAG was still on? They just kept forgetting to cancel it. So everybody just kept going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, wait, that isn't canceled already? And then they're like, oh, well, it's on Fridays at 9. Who cares? It's not hurting anybody. I feel like that's David's stupid radio job at the club.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, he never seems to ask for a paycheck, so let's just let him do what he wants.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. What is this happening to us?
So Kelly's first PR job for, as far as we know, her only client,
Speaking
Donna.
Speaking of LOL.
Seriously. It's to throw some kind of event at the store, which Camille is casually backseat driving to Kelly's bitch-faced annoyance. And in Kelly's defense, if Camille thinks that Kelly has the means to bribe editors to come with to this party with Lakers tickets, she is high. Mm-hmm. Before this can turn into a fight, David comes whirling in to tell us all this. Clip 6.
I just got a call from WTRL in New York. They want to fly me out tonight for an interview.
David, that's amazing. Bob, how long has that been in the works?
It hasn't. I don't know. I guess a producer was in town and he heard my show on the radio in the car. I don't know. I'm set up tonight at 10 o'clock to fly on the red eye.
How does that happen so fast?
I don't know. I gotta pack, all right? But I'll call you in like an hour. Wish me luck.
Hey, well, I'll meet up about 7 and give you a send-off.
See you at the club.
Wow. New York. It's far, huh?
We've been together a month. If he gets this job... we're finished.
Listen to what the universe is telling you, Camille.
Seriously. First of all, WTRL. Haha.
Yeah.
Second of all, throughout this episode, and actually in a bunch of recent episodes, now that I'm noticing it, Brian Austin Green does not have any makeup on, and it's not good. He just looks like he's been inside for a year. That like take a little bronzer, don't be a hero. The third thing is like they're not flying you out there. No, none of this is happening. But if it were, just like pack, wait for a cab to the airport. You don't need like a send-off party at the club.
Yeah.
Before
you're
gonna
be back in 2 days.
Jesus. Yeah, you're not like sailing to. Why do I care? Let's move on.
Also, he's just finished saying you're on the red eye tonight. Like, it's daytime. You have probably half a day to get your shit together, and you're a guy. Like,
yeah,
put a toothbrush in one pair of underwear in a bag. Goodbye.
Yeah. Also, they have clothes in New York. It's not a big deal.
They do. And the advantage is Donna didn't make any of them, so you might actually look okay if you just buy something when you get there. The other noteworthy thing about this is that after Camille says that if he gets the job, they're finished, that there's a long pause on Donna as she looks extremely smug about this. So things are starting to really turn now. Thank God.
Finally. Jesus.
So at the club that night, where, as a reminder, everyone is out clubbing at 7 p.m., Camille is still micromanaging Kelly's PR campaign and getting on her nerves, and Donna in the middle is trying to be polite. And when Camille's gone to dance with David, Kelly complains that she's a know-it-all, and Donna implies that she's also over Camille because she's jealous about David. Eventually, David and Donna end up alone together at the table in clip 7.
Do you know how enormous our phone bills are going to be if you move to New York?
You know what? If I do actually get a job there, I'm sure it'll end up being a late shift. I probably won't be able to call you from the office. We can email each other.
Woo.
Why would you be calling her during your, quote, shift anyway?
Yeah.
You're on the radio, dumbass.
But also, remember long distance charges?
God, barely.
I know. Also during the scene, he puts his beer bottle in his mouth, and he like puts his entire mouth around the opening like a monkey. There's a pic in the visual aids because it really bothered me.
It's really weird.
It's gross. David then violates the boundaries, not just of his bottle, but also that Camille tried to set up in the last episode by asking Donna whether Camille has said anything about his possibly moving. Donna disloyally reports that it's too soon for a long-distance relationship, and David jokes that maybe he'll ask Camille to move to New York with him. And then Camille comes back, and they start kissing, and on the dance floor, Kelly and Matt flirt and laugh, and Donna is alone. And at the store the next day, Donna walks in with a big box of party decorations, and Camille starts chafing her too in clip 8.
I thought Kelly was picking up the party supplies.
Yeah, but she had to go see Dylan, and it was on my way, so.
Well, Jane Thayer called from the LA Chronicle. She can't make it to the party, but I'll take her to lunch when she gets back from Paris.
Or you could just set it up for Kelly. She is my publicist.
Donna, I do her a favor, and all I get is attitude. What's with her?
She's a twat. Read the manual.
Kelly is a bitch about it/things. You've been around long enough to figure that out, surely.
Seriously. Ugh.
Just then, the phone rings. It is David, who's just had his interview rescheduled and is pouting about it. Donna keeps talking to him without handing the phone to his girlfriend, while behind her, Camille stares daggers into her back. Donna's like getting ready to hang up and telling him to call her later so that he is forced to be like, can I talk to Camille?
Is it like mid conversation? All of a sudden he's like, about it. Like, you did not care about Camille for like the 20 years that this conversation took up until now. So stow it.
I mean, I took that to be like, he was just waiting for her to be done and have the sense to hand her the phone. But instead she was like, all right, talk to you later. And he was like, wait, can I talk to Camille?
That is anyway, a more generous interpretation to David, which is why I didn't think of it.
So Donna gives Camille the phone and then stands like 1 inch away from her when the two of them start schmooping around. David saying that Camille would love it there, and Camille agreeing that she's a New York girl at heart. And then it's Donna's turn to seethe.
Oh, God.
And that night, Donna and Kelly bitch about Camille and her strong opinions over a lasagna and gigantic platter of garlic bread, which it's so much garlic bread, but at the same time, I'm not mad at it.
No, me neither.
I am mad at Kelly poking around about the nature of Donna and David's relationship. And finally, Donna chirps that she wants what Camille has, a great guy, but not David. So then David calls Donna to tell her he got the job, LOL. She's happy for him, but he falls silent as he suddenly realizes what it means and how much he's going to miss Donna. Also that he hasn't called Camille yet, because when he picked up the phone, the first person he wanted to talk to was Donna. And then it's time for the big party at the store, which is a hit. But Camille can't even give Kelly her props for all her work because she's worried about where David is and sad that he took the job. And Donna and Kelly give each other a look like, can you believe this bitch? And when Kelly goes off to greet Matt, Donna tells Camille that she should compliment Kelly on pulling it off so well despite all their friction in the process. And Kelly agrees that Donna is right. She's just so preoccupied with David's job situation. And Donna reminds Camille, like she could have possibly forgotten, that David's friends have known him most of his life, which is not true. Donna's barely known him until her second junior year of high school.
Yep.
So it'll be hard on everyone when he moves, not just on Camille, like, okay, like weird thing to say, but...
Yeah, right? Don't what about her at this time.
Yeah.
Idiot.
So sometime later, Dylan is creepily staring at the girl he likes through the glass walls of the store while a party is going on, as one does. Brandon did it before him, also at the same girl. And then David's also there, having just arrived from the airport and mumbling a bunch of vague bullshit that boils down to he's realizing he loves Donna again. Donna's outfit, by the way, she's wearing like a sort of a khaki skirt and this turquoise tank top with a tie down the middle. But because of where it hits her and the height of her skirt, it looks like she's wearing a tool belt. You can see this in the visual.
Yes, it's weird.
It's weird. Dylan asks if David is taking the job in New York, and David is not. Dylan asks if it's because of Donna, and David just laughs and asks if Dylan is going in. He is not and wanders out. Dylan has his own shit going on, which we will get to. And then Camille comes out and hugs David as inside Donna finally catches up to the rest of us in clip 9.
Question. Can you suddenly realize that a breakup was stupid? I mean, a really old breakup. Some sort of statute of limitations. What are you talking about? What if I've looked everywhere else only to finally realize that what I want is right in front of me? Are you saying that's what it is? I'm so in love with them.
The push
what
in
is with that
goes
final
on,
chord? That whole music sequence was so weird.
The push in goes on so long that they can't even keep her face in focus. Like, just cut. Jesus. Put a promo, something. Yeah. I will say this is the only likable moment Kelly has had in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's when she's like, sort of inadvertently, she's like, wait, you mean David? Like,
that? Yeah.
Word.
Her? Yeah, seriously. On to the A-plot, should Jack come out of witness protection? So we pick up with the McKays more or less where we left off, and Jack wastes no time launching into some exposition in clip 10.
You know, I've been in a witness protection program for 7 years now. I've been under the thumb of a U.S. Marshal, so I understand feeling trapped.
I saw your life, Jack. I saw your house. Looks a lot cozier than the urn I picked out for you. Was I supposed to see the explosion? Is that how it works?
I walked to the car. An FBI agent grabbed me, threw me in a van. I didn't know where or when.
You knew you were leaving. You had to give them some kind of information to make a deal.
They gave me a chance and I took it, yes. But it meant walking away from every part of my life, including you.
So why are you here?
Because you came after me.
Christine Pettit tell you that?
No, Kelly called me. And I'm glad she did because it gives me a chance to tell you how sorry I am, Dylan. Look, I only have a few days.
You got less than that. Get out.
God, that I was like, that just kept going. I was like, they know I'm waiting. Yeah. Uh-huh. Back there in the past, they know. Uh-huh. Oh, best.
so good.
I mean, it's horrible, but so good. Also, Jack, you don't sound that sorry.
No.
Like, you came all the way back here to pick up a paycheck, Josh Taylor. Why don't you just do the work?
Yeah.
Why don't you just act sorry?
Yeah.
Anyway.
This retcon is so weird. Like, what a thing to do with 5 episodes left to go. God.
I know. Yeah, it's very odd.
Anyway, but the soundtrack feels a certain way about it. Yeah. Please play clip 11. Welcome home, baby. It's silver. So glad you're back into my
What?
I mean,
they're not going out.
No.
I'm just picturing them, like, rolling not... around in some peach satin sheets. Like,
yeah, I'm sure it's a replacement track, but oh God, it's so bad and wrong.
It's really bad. You know what else is bad? I regret to inform you that there are actually 7 more episodes.
Oh, well, I think it's a two-parter.
Oh, okay.
The finale is a two-parter, I believe.
Don't we have some, like, Matt downward curly Q and a heroin addiction still?
Really? That is news to me. I had definitely checked out by this point.
Let's get through this nonsense before we worry about that nonsense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Dave, to give you a perspective on, like, what was going on in our lives at the time this episode was airing, this is when I was working at Saturday Night. That's how long, that's like, we were right. Well into marriage by this point. It's insane to think how long this show went on. It went on longer than Melrose. Went on forever. It's still, it literally still goes on. Yeah. Our timeline.
Me and you, back home, young love.
Thank you.
This was also year one of Dawson's Rap. We had been running a website together for several months at the point this happened. God, oh, yeah. We've known each other a long time. Anyway.
Oh, wait. So, no, this is 2000, right? When this aired?
Oh, my God, you're right. This is Television That Pity.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie, okay, I swear stop. To God. Look, we're all nostalgic. I get it. I started this. Now I'm finishing it. Kelly comes back from, quote, work, unquote, to find Dylan on the deck wanting to pick a fight about her having called Jack, and with very bad hair, by the way, which you can see in the visual aids.
It's a big.
She doesn't blame Dylan for being mad, but also doesn't apologize. Dylan won't go to see Jack and doesn't care that he's risking his life to see Dylan. And Kelly says she sees what their 7 years apart have done to Dylan, so I guess we're back on that. She thinks life can change in a second, urges him to go see Jack, even if it's just to say goodbye. So Dylan does dramatically clip 12.
Oh, God.
Went to a church once in Rome and I prayed for you. Seemed pointless. I didn't want to talk to God. I wanted to talk to you.
I'm listening.
We better step back because I'm pretty pissed.
Like, Jack literally opens the door and, like, there's no preamble. He just says, it's like, creak, I went to a church once in Rome. Like, that's how the scene goes.
Well, and as usual, like, I love that Josh Taylor's acting choice is always to be sort of faintly bemused by what a drama king Dylan is. It started with the I'm on Thanksgiving furlough to fuck Christine episode. Mm-hmm. I'm paraphrasing barely. Yes. And has continued, like, whenever he's on screen, that Dylan would be like, forget you, Dad. And he's like, okay. Yeah. Up to you, pal or sport or whatever the fuck he's calling him. Son. Mm-hmm. Which no one does in real life.
Yes. There's a picture in the visual aids of the look on his face after Dylan has just disgorged all of this dumb dramatico exposition where he's like, whatever. Like, it's very fun.
He's like, we can't have a relationship. He's like, not with that attitude. Like, okay. I just love that he's always like, all right, drama king.
So they've barely started making small talk when Jack's wife calls, but he quickly gets rid of her, saying he'll be back in a day. And when he's hung up, we learn her name is Lisa, and his littler son is Jack. Not that most people know it's his namesake, although Lisa does. Jack adds that he didn't tell Lisa what this trip is really for because it was a risk, but she knows his whole backstory, minus the part where he already had a kid, and Dylan gets all wounded about Jack's priorities and saunters out again.
He does saunter, like, at least stalk.
Right. So the next day, Kelly has her bitchiest face on to go harass Dylan about whether he saw his father. Don't you have a store event to plan? Mind your own literal business.
Don't you have two random front hair strings to put into the barrettes that are holding the rest of your hair? Bee hatch?
Yeah.
Don't you have a bee to eat?
He crabbily gives her a recap, leave it to the professionals, and tells her again to quit making him revisit his grief and trauma. And then the phone rings. It's Jack, who wants to meet Dylan at the beach that night. So then we cut over to that. A cop or agent or marshal or whatever stands guard while Jack makes his pitch. He wants Dylan in his life, and if that's going to happen, they need to figure it out now. They can't wait for Dylan's anger to pass. Dylan doesn't know how he's supposed to believe that Jack isn't just going to fuck off out of his life again. And Jack says this time he's willing to bet his life on it by leaving the witness protection program or else having Dylan come into it. Which is very reckless considering we've just established, like, you have a wife and a kid. Like, that's the whole point of witness protection. Like, well, it's make Dylan not be mad at me or have everyone be alive, and I guess I've chosen.
Well, I pretty much assumed that this was a bluff call.
I see.
Designed that Dylan would be like, Dylan would eventually relent, and because Jack actually doesn't give that big of a shit about Dylan, like a little bit of a shit, but not like a, you know, upper decker or anything. Sure. He's like, all right, well, fine. I'll just leave witness protection, or you could come in, and then just assumes that Dylan A, did not want to move to Arizona because he can never go back to Arizona. And B, that he wouldn't risk Jack's life. And I'm sure Jack's next call was to Christine to be like, will you tell this stick insect how dangerous it is for me to leave WITSEC? And she's like, what? Anyway, that's my extensive retcon of this situation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That I spent hours of my life, not hours, but, you know, still won't get the time back, and neither will any of us, so let's proceed.
Indeed. The agent thinks that a passing motorist was watching Jack, so they have to go, and Dylan has a lot to think about. So Jack's in a great mood the next morning at Dylan's suite, bringing coffee and delicious-looking apple fritters from Stan's. Dylan is nervous about someone recognizing Jack if he keeps coming around, but Jack just says Dylan's little brother is going to love Stans. He has realized he can't ask Dylan to give up his life. What life? So he'll give up his own. Whatever protection Jack is getting now, he says, he and Dylan can finance privately. And to Dylan's question, he says he hasn't told his wife about it yet. Like, back up. Try that again. You haven't asked her, or at the very least, discussed it. Mm-hmm. Jack thought he and Dylan could tell Lisa together. Oh, good. The son her husband never told her about is going to tell her how shit is. Even better.
Yeah, especially that son.
Yeah.
Like, lock up the scotch. You don't want him throwing it at the side of the house.
So Dylan comes to Kelly's house that night to thank her for ignoring his wishes and brokering this time with his dad and what has come of it since. He's happy for the first time in a long time, he says, and he smiles and we see his teeth, so it must be true. And he then clearly wants to kiss her for real, but instead puts his hands on her neck and kisses her cheek while she looks disappointed. He thanks her again and tells her Matt is lucky. And the next day, Agent Williams, the guy from the beach, gets Dylan from his suite and brings him to the federal building for a meeting with Christine, who tells him Jack is in danger. Dylan Riley says that's an improvement of his status from the last time they talked when she told him he was dead. And she just blows past this to say they picked up his name on some wires they're monitoring. Two guys that Jack testified against know he's alive. And Dylan snottily says he'll pass that on to the private security company they've hired. And Christine insists that Jack needs government protection, that he's only thinking of coming out of the program for Dylan. And if he gets killed, is on Dylan. And can Dylan live with that? So then Jack is in his motel room in his very fuzzy, like, mohair shaker knit sweater.
It looks extremely fuzzy and comfortable, but that's not a sweater for gentlemen, I don't necessarily feel. I mean, actually, Kurt Cobain had a sweater like that.
Sure.
But that's for Kurt Cobain, you sir, etc.
Yes. It's not for dads in their 50s, for sure. Anyway, Dylan shows up. Jack is still packing, and yet Hector's Dylan for being late. Like, he's not even ready. My dad would have been sitting silently in the one chair in the room with his suitcase zip for like the past 4 hours by now.
Oh, your dad would sit silently? Neat. Can I join your family? My dad would be carrying me to the car. Like, do you mind? We're only going to be 3 hours early.
Ugh, oh my God, 3 hours early. Your dad lives on the edge.
I set him up. Sweet Lou knocks him down 3 hours early.
Anyway, Dylan is there to tell Jack the names of the mobsters that Jack testified against, one of whom is named Justin. Like, no, he's not.
I know.
We have a 21-year-old Sheila and then fucking Justin from the skateboard squad
and his
getting
wife,
ready to kill Jad McKay.
Phyllis.
What the fuck?
Okay.
Anyway.
Justin.
So stupid. Dylan says they know he's alive, but Jack ignores that to talk about routes to LAX. Dylan says he heard a tape. If Jack stays in LA, they will find him. He no longer thinks private security is equal to this threat. Jack guesses Christine's the one who told him about all this. Duh. And Dylan is prepared to let Jack stay in witness protection, even if it means they will never see each other again. And we hear that in our final clip.
I hated you for a long time. You don't know what it's like to hate your father. It ruins everything. I don't hate you anymore.
Come with me.
You got a plane to catch.
Dylan, come with me.
Shut up.
Dylan. Gotta make this work.
It works. Now it works.
This storyline has been dumb, but Luke Perry is really good in this scene. I thought,
yeah.
Actually, both of them are.
Yes. I do wish that whoever directs these scenes would stop it with the fighting and Dylan avoiding eye contact, and then the like abrupt like startle hug from Jack, because we've seen that in like multiple scenes. I guess they're counting on everyone who was watching in season 3 having bailed long ago, which checks out. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing in this exchange that gives the lie to my theory that this was all a setup to make Dylan quote let Jack go back into WITSEC. So
yeah, well,
we never saw
that's
him again.
Where we leave it. Let us name our episode MVP. Christine, who finally convinced Dylan to listen to sense.
Jack McKay, that was a pretty good con, I must say. Listeners, well, I hope that you agree with me. Let me know at AWT 90210.
Least valuable player. The program director at WTRL.
Yeah, more like WLOL. Yeah, I'd have to agree. But I mean, also Matt, kind of.
Yeah.
Why are you?
Why did this get to court? This is a routine contract dispute.
Yeah. In which your client is actually liable.
Yeah. Oof. Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways in this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Starts right up top, telling his dad to get out. He's so mad.
Telling his dad to, or letting his dad pretend he's going to leave witness protection. It's pretty dangerous.
He's also mad at Kelly in their scene with her bitch face showing up at his hotel room door.
It's dangerous to walk around with your hair sticking that far off the front of your head. You're going to poke someone in the eye. That's a lawsuit, and Matt's your lawyer, so you're screwed.
It's dangerous to meet your basically a fugitive dad out in public, even at night on the beach.
Yeah, like in a dark parking lot. Have you not watched TV before? That's not going to end
honestly.
Well.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I knew it was coming, and yet I wasn't prepared. Next time on Again With This Melrose Place Edition, it's bad news for the littlest Mancini when an ultrasound shows a disturbing development, but great news for an audience rapidly losing consciousness from boredom when Michael chooses to vent about his grief to a coworker whose name is Dr. Kimberly Shaw.
What?
Put an LED bulb in your Manson lamps in order to check out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. That's on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, and occasionally on our Twitter account, at AWT90210. And light a candle for us at our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. I am enormous phone bill Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is expert comedy witness Tara Ariano, and she's at Tara Ariano. And our producer is successful WitSec Bluff David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do. After the beep, Rooney.
This shit is stuck in my head now. I hate you so much.